Okay, so first I'm going to introduce just one particle on a chain. Okay, trivial quantum mechanics, and then write down a real space RG for that, talk about why it doesn't work, talk about a DMRG type algorithm to fix it, and then talk a little bit about, even though it fixes it and it works extremely well, it's still flawed in a certain way. And I'll talk about wavelets. And this will lead sort of naturally to Mira, but I really won't say that much about Mira itself. It'll just emerge as sort of the way I'm describing the wavelets. The other title of this, the main title is Wavelets and Mira, but the subtitle is How to Understand Mira When You're Not as Smart as Giffray. Okay, so single particle on a chain, we just have a single particle hopping along. It's not even a tight binding chain in the sense that tight binding chain, you know, you fill up the levels up to some Fermi level. We're just going to have one particle. And so you describe this just in terms of a matrix, which I will take as this matrix. Okay, and then I can think of this as two ways. I can start at a lattice at unit scale along A, and I can think of going out to larger scales in the usual sort of RG sense, or I can think of this as the way you discretize the kinetic energy for a one-dimensional problem. And in that case, to make it look like the kinetic energy, you put a 1 over 2 a squared here. And then you try to take the limit that a goes to 0. And then it becomes just a representation of minus 1 half d squared dx squared. Okay, so this is the whole Hamiltonian. You can relate it to the hopping term in a Hamiltonian, but it's only one particle, so we don't need that. Okay, the 2s are along the diagonal, which you wouldn't have in the usual tight binding, but that's what makes it look like the kinetic energy. It gives you E of k equals 0. Okay, so the problem that I want to pose is a trivial problem, which we can write down the solution analytically, but I want to try to use complicated algorithms with this as the test case. So the problem is just to compute, say, 5 or 10 eigenstates of this system starting with the ground states. On a big lattice. So say 1,000 or 10,000 sites. So trivial in many ways to do this. Okay, so now let me write down an algorithm for doing this that's I'll call the real space RG algorithm. This algorithm pretends that we don't know how to solve a finite difference equation analytically, and we don't have any access to matrices bigger than 2 by 2 or 10 by 10. Yep.
Sorry, I understand that. Yes. So what you're saying is the vector space has, I mentioned, this number of sets.
Yes.
And this matrix is a Hamiltonian in the basis where you have your particle on.
Yeah, the basis is like the particle sitting there.
And then what's this number 2?
So the number 2 on the diagonal. So if you put in a constant wave vector, then, you know, put it here, you can see that that has eigenvalue 0. And so the 2 makes it look like the kinetic energy. Okay, so I want to think of it sometimes as the kinetic energy trying to go towards the continuum. And then this is just the standard thing that we write down in finite differences from numerical analysis, or I can think of it going in the other direction to large length scales in sort of a tight binding way, and then usually you wouldn't have the 2.
So this 2 is just a constant?
Yeah, it doesn't.
But you choose it because it's a natural number.
It's not actually going to come in. Okay, I'm not actually going to really use this. This is just to make it sort of definite, but I'm going to be at sort of less specific level. Okay, So the real space RG we'll think of as, I'll write at this level the original lattice, and then I'm going to think about blocking it. So here's the next level, sort of the RG level. And then I'll block twice as big, etc. Okay, so this is a picture. Let me tell you the specific calculations that you do. You diagonalize what I'll call H block, which is the Hamiltonian when you're restricted just to the sort of looking at the part of this Hamiltonian inside one block. So the zeroth order is just 2 minus 1 minus 1, 2. Okay, okay. And then the second step is we keep the lowest m states from this diagonalization in energy. Okay, so if I could have started the first one with some larger block, and because the first ones are trivial because you keep all of them. But so I start at some level, and I'm gonna keep this number of states m constant, and it's gonna be something like 5 or 10. And then so keeping these states means I throw away the other states. I transform the Hamiltonian using this. I won't go into the details on that. But then after this, you just move up to the next level. So move to the bigger length scale by a factor of 2. Okay, so this is a very simple little calculation that you can write in a you know, little fraction of a page program. It just works with small matrices. You know, at each blocking stage, you might take 2m states and diagonalize that and then reduce it down to m states. Okay, so this is sort of a translation of a technique, a real space RG technique that was used for interacting systems in a space where, you know, instead of having just n states for an n-site lattice, you might have 2 to the n states. And so we translate it to this very simple language, and then the question is, how well does this work? And the answer is it works horribly. So horribly in the sense of completely useless, can't extract any useful information out of it. In the interacting cases, people try to extract information out of it. But you can see here, in this case, that it turns out that it doesn't work at all, and nothing useful at all comes out of it. And it's very easy to see why that is. I'll get to that in a minute. Okay, let me draw a tensor diagram. A tensor network diagram for this. Okay, so just this structure here of blocking this way. Draw a tensor diagram that looks like this. Okay, so that's the tensor diagram that describes how this calculation. So we're putting two sites together, and in this calculation, eventually we would have, you know, some sort of m states here that we're going up to. But it's like the diagrams that are done in the usual tensor networks for interacting systems. But there's a different interpretation for each piece of the diagram. You know, it's a direct sum space rather than a direct product space. So, you know, if you have m states here and m states there, when you put them together, there's only 2 m states, and then it reduces down to m. Okay, but a lot of the sort of intuition is very similar. The diagrams come out the same, and so it gives you some information. So this is a sort of a tree tensor network. Okay, now why does this work so horribly? Okay, so up to here, this idea that it worked horribly, this explanation was due to Wilson, and then what we were able to figure out was how to fix it. And I'll get to that. But so Wilson had the explanation of why it works so horribly, and so why you shouldn't expect these real space RGs to work. And the idea in this context is that if we look at some larger scale, say this scale, and say, well, what would the ground state of the block Hamiltonian at this scale be? Well, if I go back and I think of this as a continuum, and I think of just discretizing the continuum, then I'm really just solving a particle in a box. Okay, so what's the lowest energy state of a particle in a box? So I've cut off everything else, so it's like it has infinite walls. And so here's this sine wave, and that's the ground state of one of these boxes. So at some length scale, what I'm trying to get is here's the box, and I'm trying to get this is the ground state. Okay, but what did I get from the previous length scale when I was truncating? Well, somehow this is supposed to come out of taking two smaller things that both look like this. Okay, and so the problem is that there is this kink, that the cutting off the interactions to the edge sends the wave function to zero at the edge. And so in the middle of this, you have this kink, and you want the middle of this to be completely smooth. And these kinks start appearing as soon as you first start truncating the number of states at all. They don't appear if you keep all of the states, because it then just goes back that it knows it's on the lattice, and it can, there aren't any real discontinuities on the lattice. But as soon as you start truncating, you get this effect. And so you're trying to represent big smooth functions with all sorts of kinks put in. Okay, so that gives us some insight of why this procedure doesn't really work. Okay, so now let me give you a DMRG fix for this. So a DMRG of this real space RG. Okay, so for DMRG, we're going to always consider the block that we're truncating as part of a bigger system. So let's make a bigger system. Here's the block of interest that we're going to truncate. And here's some surrounding system. You call this the environment. Okay, so the idea is that we solve the whole system. And we get a set of wave functions, say psi j. Okay, now you can construct. This is a funny board. Okay, so let me put some degrees of freedom in here. Think of them as lattice sites, A, and I'll label them by L. Okay, and so I want to know how to truncate this block. Okay, so what I do is I calculate some eigenstates of the bigger system, the lowest energy eigenstates on some larger system. I'm not going to be too specific on what that system is. There's various choices. But then you can construct a density matrix. Rho LL prime goes over these degrees of freedom of the block as sum on j, psi j L prime. OK, so you construct this density matrix. It takes the pieces of the wave function that overlap with the block and adds them in sort of outer product form. And when you add this into a matrix, you get, and then you diagonalize it, you find that the eigenvectors are very good at representing all of the pieces that go into it as well as possible. So you diagonalize this row, and you take the m dominant eigenvectors. And you keep those. So the difference in it, this algorithm, is that the states that I'm keeping over here in the original case were the lowest energy states in terms of this block Hamiltonian. Here, I use a Hamiltonian to diagonalize a bigger system, but then I just use the wave function here and calculate this density matrix and keep the dominant eigenvectors of that. Okay, so how well does this work? And the answer is it works great. It works amazingly well. You know, get sort of, if you do this procedure trying to solve the system on, you know, 1,000 or 10,000 sites, this gives you no accuracy at all, and this gives you very easily 8 or 10 digits if you just try it out. Okay, so what is the tensor network for this algorithm? Well, the tensor network for this algorithm is still just a tree. Okay, so this algorithm did not change the structure of the network. I'm still putting together pieces of wave function, blocking them together in exactly this way. The change in the algorithm is just how I choose those wave functions. So over here, diagonalize the block Hamiltonian. Here I do this density matrix thing. Okay, and so that makes all the difference. The tree tensor network is still the description. Okay, so this sort of picture led pretty quickly, just sort of have to translate this picture into many particle language. And it leads to the DMRG that we usually think about in terms of interacting systems. And this is sort of the path that I took in developing DMRG. So Wilson's analysis of this was never published. We had there's a PRL by White and Nowak that from about 1991 that describes how you can fix this in the single particle context. Okay, now this works great, but it has a flaw in a certain sense. So as a practical tool, it's extremely useful, but there's a flaw in terms of thinking about it as a renormalization group. So in a renormalization group, what you're trying to do, you're at a critical point, you're trying to renormalize and get scale invariance. And this doesn't have a nice property of scale invariance. So in fact, it has energy scales that, so as we make the system larger and larger with this sort of structure of the Hamiltonian, the energies should drop by a factor of 4 every time we double the size of the system. They go as k squared. And in this case, they don't do that. So how do the energies go? Well, if I think about it in terms of starting with a length scale of order 1 and making the system bigger, so if I go to length L, then psi will go as 1 over root L. And there's so what do these states look like when we diagonalize the density matrix? Well, the dominant one will just essentially be a flat function within the block. So here's the block. And depending on the details of what you build into the density matrix, it may vary a bit. But the wave function, the dominant eigenvector, will look something like this. And so it's essentially cut off at the edges of the blocks. So since it doesn't necessarily go to zero at the edges of the block, it's able to piece together pieces in order to make wave functions at larger scales without some sort of kinks forced in. Okay, but this sharp edge introduces a higher energy scale. So the energy scale comes from, you have something of order one, but it's multiplied by the wave function. And the energy scale, you get E of order psi squared times of order one for the terms at the edge of the block. And so it goes of order one over L. And you want order of one over L squared. Okay, so we do this renormalization. We construct a new Hamiltonian for the blocked up system. And there are terms in that Hamiltonian that have, you know, coefficients, energy scales. And we would like, if they were on this big scale of length L, and we're only trying to get things that are smooth on that length scale, we would like all the parameters in that Hamiltonian to be of order 1 over L squared. Okay, that's the energy scale. And you know, if you just put in L here, you would see it's 1 over L squared. That's the natural energy scale. When we do this procedure, and we put in these density matrix eigenvectors, it gives you edge artifacts. It gives you all the pieces so that these edges can all fit together and cancel just right. But it has these big energy scales of order 1 over L instead of 1 over L squared. And if you think about it in the other way of going to the continuum, of saying I'm trying to do something where I want to represent the continuum with a very fine grid. So let's do the same argument that way. So if I say I have one of these functions which looks like this sort of step function, but there's a grid scale underneath of order A that it's smoothed out on. So here's A. Okay, and I say, what's the kinetic energy of this wave function? So it's not quite a step function. It goes down at a finite slope on the edges here. Okay, and but it's of unit length. So this is 1. Okay, so the kinetic energy comes from this piece. The slope goes as 1 over A. And so you have an integral of psi prime squared dx. And this goes as 1 over A squared times the width of the region A. And so this is of order 1 over A. Yeah?
So it seems like you have the 1 over L squared energy scale in your reverse scheme, which didn't fit together well. And you gave that up to make blocks, but then they have this high energy scale.
Right. Yeah, well, so this fixed it by artificially shoving the wave function to zero at the edges.
Right.
And but it doesn't give you L squared, 1 over L squared, because those things are then in the middle. It then went to zero in the middle, and you know, and it was at a short length scale. When your first truncation, it shoved things to zero in the middle. So it's actually an extremely high energy. This first guy gives you just as extreme. Exactly. Right. So over here, you're eventually going to have some, and you're trying to make some sort of big smooth wave function out of something that goes to zero at every block edge that ever was. Right. So this works much better, but it still sort of has this flaw. Okay. So how do we deal with this problem? Well, you're sort of led, the only way to really, you know, we can picture the sort of wave functions that we can think about in this context, and it's clear that what you have to do is you have to smear out the edges. In other words, the functions that you're looking at a certain length scale can't have any singularities from a smaller length scale. It has to have just sort of the lower k components. Okay, so we have to do something like this, right? That they smear out. Okay, but then one of the things that we're trying to preserve in this is that everything is orthogonal. Okay, so if you try to make functions like this and you say, well, I want them to be orthogonal, then they have to have wiggles. Okay, and so you're sort of led to thinking about functions that look like this. Okay, and so now we'll switch over. So this we'll think of as the scaling function of a wavelet, and now let me start talking about wavelets. Okay. Can I even reach that? I don't want to break it. Okay, so you can read about wavelets in Numerical Recipes, one of my favorite numerical analysis book. And you can also just get started by looking at Wikipedia. Okay. Okay, and I want to look specifically at the case of orthogonal sets of wavelets. There are lots of other, but there are some other types. Okay, so now let's pause in our thinking about this. What is a wavelet? Well, first of all, we start with a wavelet transformation. Okay, so you can think of a wavelet transformation as being like an RG transformation on the space of functions, 1D functions. Okay, and it's like this real space RG, so we're going to think of we'll have a grid, and we'll put a function on it. And I'm not going to worry about exactly what they look like, just put a bump here. And I'm going to put a function on each grid point, and I won't worry right now what they are. And then there's going to be an RG transformation that blocks it up to a bigger scale. And so there's going to be a bigger function, and there's going to be half as many of them. They're all going to be identical. And then we'll continue this RG transformation going up to bigger and bigger length scales. Okay, so in terms of functions, we have this, I'll call this level L, and this L plus 1. So in this case, the higher level is going to shorter length scales. And I'm going to insist that the functions at the higher level, or the bigger length scale, are linear combinations of the functions at the smaller length scale. So I'm going to write SL of x as a root 2, sum on k, sum coefficient ck, and the SL plus 1 of 2x minus k. Okay, so k is from minus infinity to infinity, but in many of the functions, we'll just be considering that most of the cks are zero, so it'll actually be limited. Well, so at this point, I'm just defining a transformation. So eventually, I'm going to say, well, we're really interested in the fixed point where the function s doesn't have a subscript l on it anymore. Sure. Yeah. So this one has this factor of 2 here, which means that it's actually scrunched up. Okay. So I can take the same function. Say this is spacing 1. If I put in the 2 here, then this is spacing 1/2. Okay. So this equation really only works, say, between the level 1 and level 1/2. I think there, you know, if you, let's see, there may be some.
But I do not understand what S of L plus 1 is.
Yeah, so it's S of L plus 1 and SL.
Is that a basis? I mean, you're starting with a basis. S of L plus 1 is you give me a point and I give you a real number?
Yeah, so you give me one function, S L plus 1.
What can you tell me what this function is?
Well,
so it's a map from the
number. Oh, sorry. It's a one-dimensional function, S of X. If you want to think of a specific example, you can think of the sinc function.
Evaluated on the different points?
No. Evaluated continuously.
Okay.
So this is all continuously.
Okay.
Yeah. So think of this as SL plus 1 or SL, right? And it's continuous. Okay. So then given this at the smaller length scale, I say I'm going to make a function at a bigger length scale as a linear combination of the smaller length scale. And I'm going to try to do it in a way to keep the smooth parts. So when I do this, I apply it so that you end up with half as many functions at the next level because they're spaced twice the distance apart. And so let's say this is spacing A.
So this is not a single function.
And this is 2A. It is a single function.
Okay,
but let's see, you can say these functions are S L plus 1 of X minus K.
Like
right, so I put the, I just translated.
You're like identifying the peaks of the function with the latest size.
Yes. Okay. No. If I put in a 2 here, then if this, there's say the function, the simplest case is a function that goes like this from 0 to 1, and it goes up to 1, right? So if I make this function, if I put in x equals 1 half, I get 1 here, and so it makes it go to the edge. So, so the root 2 is here just as a normalization. So if I take a function and I write it on, and I squeeze it, then to keep the normalization, squeeze it by a factor of 2, I have to bump up its height by square root of 2.
So the SNL is actually smaller than SNL plus 1?
No. So it's a linear combination of these, so it's added summed over k. Okay, so I'm going to make these CKs have a finite range. Yeah, and so it will add them together. So you can think of adding, the simplest thing is you can say, I'm going to add these two together to make this guy. Okay, so that is actually the simplest example. So the simplest example is called the Haar wavelet. And that has C0 equals 1 over root 2 and C1 equals 1 over root 2.
There's no L index on CK.
Right. You can put an L index on CK, and that turns out to be very interesting. But I'm not going to talk about that here. What? Yeah. So K is an integer. So it counts along. And so every integer K essentially corresponds to a peak. But it, as you go to a different level with different, if you sort of write SL in terms of SL plus 10, there'll be a 2 to the 10 here, and it'll reflect a fine grid with a spacing 1 over 2 to the 10.
A question about x. On lattice level L plus 1, x ranges from 0 to 8.
Uh-huh.
On level L, is that still ranging from 0 to 8?
So is that because so it goes off to infinity, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but so in this case, so this Haar wavelet has C I not equal to 0 and 1 equals 0. Okay, so if I chose these C's to be long range, then this function could have very long tails.
Okay, I guess what I'm getting at is the spatial coordinate x. Is there a mistake x going from the level, or is it the same coordinate?
Well, this too effectively acts as the rescaling.
So we do sort of take some region and map it to the region half itself.
Yeah. So this function is designed to allow you to drop the index. The way of writing is designed to let you drop the L plus 1 and the L and just look at the fixed point function where they're the same. And then the fixed point function is sort of defined on the unit scale. And you know, this equation will sort of reflect the unit scale being the same as the half unit scale.
Is the 2, which is the coefficient of x, is that not related to the range of k?
Let's see. So if I write this as 2 x minus k over 2, then you can see that as k takes integer values, I'm stepping along with a grid that's half the spacing. But this the range of it is comes from the, what the CKs do, how they fall off.
Right. So in this picture, where you're adding the bits of the function at L plus 1 to get a bit of the function at there, the number of bits you're adding, that's not... The number of these
bits
that you're adding. So that doesn't correspond to how much you're scaling.
Right. So this the length is being rescaled at each step by a factor of 2,
and I'm
right. Right. So regardless of the range of CK, I'm rescaling by a factor of 2. Okay. So the functions can overlap if I make the C's go out farther. Right. So they'll look like here's one of them, and so they'll have perfect oscillations to cancel out so that the overlap between these two, they're orthogonal, that overlap is zero.
Right, so if it was equal to the range of k, that would be like having edges there.
Yeah, so this Haar wavelet only goes out root 2, which is the same as the blocking. So the actual fixed point scaling function is this function. It's got this hard edge. Let's see. I don't think I want to try to, you know, waste time thinking on my feet to prove things. But it's simple enough that if you just sit down for a minute, it should be. Yeah. So, I mean, so it's this and this, and you add them together, and they join, and it makes this. I mean, that's, yeah. Yeah. Over here. Yeah. Yeah. So over here, I write down this simple example, and it gives you this not very good function, right? Has the same flaws as what I was complaining about for the DMRG-RG. It has the edges. Okay, but if I make these, so in just a minute, I'm going to go out to something that goes out a little bit farther. And then as soon as you go out farther, then you start getting fixed point functions that look like this, more or less. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so we can draw. So if you look at where these functions come from, it's just a real space RG, so it has a tree. So this looks like. In particular, this guy, this Haar wavelet, has a tree structure, because it only blocks together two sites at a time. Okay, so the same tree we've been seeing before is for this Haar wavelet. Okay, so we'll see it in more detail later, but what it's referring to is that if the initial functions are an orthogonal set, you know, so say they were just these step functions, then you put constraints on the C's to ensure that the whole set is orthogonal, is orthonormal at the next level.
So within the next level or between levels?
then then between levels as well. Well, okay, sorry. Once you get the wavelets, so these are scaling functions. There's a wavelet that I'll talk about in just a second. And the wavelets are orthogonal between levels, and the scaling functions aren't. So this guy is not orthogonal to that guy. It's just a piece of it. But there's going to be a guy that looks like that. That's going to be the wavelet for this simple example. And so this guy is orthogonal to lots of things, right? It's orthogonal to the guy who's shifted. It's orthogonal to the guy that's, you know, squeezed in there. You know, it's at the lower level down, L plus one. Okay, so if I think about this tree tensor network, I'm really just doing it with one function. So I have one set of C coefficients, and so this is like M equals one. So the basic unit of this is just the set of CKs. And in this case, it's just C0 and C1. And if I was going to do more terms, then I have to have a thing that branches out farther. Okay, and I'm going to do that. Okay, so let me tell you what the wavelets are. I sort of do a picture. Okay, so WL of x is root 2 sum on k, C tilde k, S L plus 1 of 2x minus k. Okay, so this equation looks just like the equation I wrote up here, except with the C tilde instead of C. And C tilde k is equal to C of 1 minus k minus 1 to the k. Okay, so think of this minus 1 to the k as being like something that gives you the pi wave function. So all of a sudden it introduces higher Fourier coefficients. So you think of the CKs as being smooth, and then this introduces sort of a pi shift, and it makes it higher frequency. And this construction also makes them orthogonal. So in the case of the har, we have C tilde 0 equals 1 over root 2, and C tilde 1 equals minus 1 over root 2. Okay, but it's done in terms of, so this gives you a W function, the wavelet. The scaling function is always the smooth guy. So when I drew this wavelet over here, I took two smooth guys that were narrower, and I put them together and got this function that, you know, had sort of a wavelength at a particular length scale. Okay. So this particular construction is designed to ensure orthogonality. So one of the orthogonality conditions I can check is WLSL. Okay, so I use this equation for WL, the other equation for SL. Write this as sum on k, k prime, c tilde k, ck prime. Okay, and then let me write it with the root 2, because the root 2 is designed to make it normalized. S L plus 1 of 2x minus k. And then root 2 S L plus 1 of 2x minus k prime. Okay, so now I assume that the wavelets the scaling functions at the shorter length scale are orthonormal. So I say this is delta k k prime. And so this gives me sum on k, c tilde k, ck. And then I plug in the definition of c tilde k, and I get sum on k ck c1 minus k minus 1 to the k. Okay, and so if I now let k prime equals 1 minus k and change variables in the sum to k prime, I find that this is equal to the negative of itself. Therefore, it has to be equal to 0. Okay, so you take a function and then you just reverse it and put in these minus signs, and it's automatically guaranteed to be orthogonal, sort of irrespective of what the functions are, because it just got a positive term and a negative term when you sum them up, it cancels. Okay, so conditions like this, what it gives you is that WL is orthogonal to all bigger scale SL and WL. And it's orthogonal to the same scale WL prime and SL prime. Okay, and to smaller scale WL prime and WL. Okay, but not smaller SL. Okay, so the smaller SL form the WL, and do I have some picture to show this? It's not. Okay, so you can get a complete set if you take all WL and the top level SL. So what this WL is doing is it's taking something that sort of starts out with two functions and it forms two different linear combinations of them in a way to make sure that you have all of the degrees of freedom. You're not throwing away anything. So the WL is the high frequency part. The SL is the low frequency part. And it's constructed so that many things are orthogonal so that you can make a complete set, a multi-level set, that has all the WLs up to the very top, and then you make the SLs also, and that doesn't throw away anything, and everything is orthogonal, right? So the WLs always have, you know, if you look at the total integral of this function, the SLs normally all integrate up to 1, and the WLs always integrate up to 0. So if you have some large length scale function that you want to represent, okay, so somehow the total moment of this has to be captured by the SLs because the WLs don't have any net integral. But then sort of all the finer scale is captured by the WLs, and it sort of captures it at a variety of length scales. So the main use for these things is to get a very efficient representation of sort of arbitrary functions. So when we in physics, you know, we sometimes work in real space and we sometimes work in k-space, but there's a lot of problems that want something in between. Okay, and real space and k-space are easy to work with. In-between space is not easy to work with. And so in order to work with sort of an in-between space, these wavelets are a nice way to think about it. So they have nice properties like orthogonality. They're generally exponential. They can be exponentially localized in real space and in k-space, and you know, they're not as easy to work with as real space or k-space, but they can be quite they can be sort of the best thing that we have. Okay. So the fixed point. Yeah.
So if you take a function, you're saying function on the real line.
Right.
Then you can rewrite it, or you map it into some coefficients for this.
Right.
Or?
Right. Sum on L and K, A L K, W L K. Okay, plus an extra set for the highest level for the S's. S 0 K.
Okay, so sum is over L, but also over.
Yeah. Right. Okay, but it's going up in this, you know, sort of logarithmic scale. Okay, so the fixed point is what we're interested in, where we drop all the L indices. And we consider those to be the real scaling function, or the K scaling function of interest. S of x equals root 2 sum on k ck s of 2x minus k. Okay, so this, so the idea is that it's like an RG with irrelevant terms that you could put in. So if you start off with some sort of function S that, as long as it has some sort of simple set of properties, something to sort of guarantee completeness and smoothness, and then you apply this as an iteration going to larger and larger length scales, it'll converge to a fixed point, and you'll get an S of x, and that's the thing that we're interested in.
Did you say you fixed CK first?
So the CKs are all fixed. So for instance, you could think about doing it with these CKs, but I'm going to do some other ones in there. OK. And so then once you have the S, then W of x, the wavelet is this. So it uses the fixed point scaling function, and then it constructs the wavelet. OK, so we can draw a tensor network diagram for this simple two-component case that includes the W's. So it looks like here's a W and here's an S. So every time you block together, the S goes on up. But you spin off a W for that short length scale. You know, here this W sits. And so you get this whole collection of W's. And then at the top level, you just have an S for each top. Okay, and this should start looking like some Mira pictures. And it's going to look a little bit more like Mira pretty soon. OK, so now let's consider, so this example that we had so far with only two things is not very useful. So let's consider something with four C's. So let CK equals C0 up to C3. OK, and so if we, let's try this this diagram. Okay, so here's my lattice. Okay, so I'm going to block. Let's yeah. This picture? Yeah. Okay, so I start at the bottom with some short length scale functions like this. Okay, and I make a linear combination of them. I add them together, and I get the S function. And I add them together with a minus sign, and I get a W function. I don't do anything with the W function anymore. You know, it's got its length scale, it just sits there. I take the S function up to the next level, and I take it with the other guy over here, and I do the same thing. And so you get this, you know, the most W's are at the lowest energy scale, lowest length scale, and then as I go up, I get fewer and fewer, but they sort of give you sort of localization in space and in momentum. So these, the step functions, are not a good example, but each of these functions will have sort of a certain length scale and a certain energy momentum scale, and it sort of does a good job of compromising between localization in real space and k-space. Gives you this sort of whole set. Yeah. It's really just a case of convenience. You know, if you want to write down a second quantized Hamiltonian in this basis, okay, it's possible to do it with sort of each thing representing something that's not orthogonal, but we're not used to doing that. We'd certainly rather, you know, if I attach a C dagger to each of these functions and say that C dagger K L creates this, you know, an electron with this particular wave function, I'd like that, you know, it'd be much more convenient to have it orthogonal. Okay, but it's not required, and so for some numerical analysis, they like to give up the orthogonality. There's something called bi-orthogonal wavelets, and so it's not required, but it's certainly convenient for most of what we do.
So in the end, then this collection of S's and W's, that's the representation of
the right.
So in terms of the spectra, how is the function at the very bottom related?
Right. So the idea here is that suppose we wanted to represent, say, the exponential function like this. So the exponential function has a high k kink. Sorry, e to the minus absolute value of x, not this function. Okay, so I want to represent that. Okay, so it has a kink here. So I'll expand it in these functions, and the w's have only high k components once you sort of get to the higher order wavelets. And so you won't need this wavelet. It'll have no component in this function. But you will need it here. In order to represent this, you'll have a bunch of smaller and smaller scale W's here. And so you get away with a very simple representation. So if you want to represent this case in real space, you have to have a grid that is small enough to represent that kink. If you want to represent it in k-space, the kink means you have very high k levels. If you represent it in wavelets, you get a much more compact wave representation for either. Out here, you only have the big S's, and then you have to put some extra W functions here, right, to represent the kink, but they're localized. Okay, so I want to do this example C0 through C3, which is the thing that really becomes a mirror. Okay, so the tree diagram is not really a tree. Let's leave off the W's and just do the S's. Okay, so if I have C0 through C3, I have something that looks like this. So this is blocking this guy. The next guy is over here. So I'll put this guy here and use a different color. Now, there's no significance to drawing it a little bit higher than the other except to see it. Okay, so there's, did you do that wrong? It should overlap more. Okay. So I have a sort of a tree-like structure, but it's sort of awkward because it has, these. When you think of the C's, they get their information to construct the function. They sort of overlap and use the same sites, and that's not the usual way we do it in drawing tensor networks. So there's a lot of overlap here. Next one's over here. Okay. Okay, so I'll fix this in a little bit. Okay, but so let's now just think in terms of wavelets and in terms of making this set of four C's into a useful wavelet. So we'll write down some criteria for the C's. Okay, so first of all, you want them to be orthogonal. Okay, so you have to do this explicitly in this case. Over here, they were orthogonal just because they were on different sites. Here, they overlap in this region. Okay, so you have to make them orthogonal. Okay, so if I draw one of these, it has C0, C1, C2, C3. So if I draw two of them, they overlap like this. Okay, so if I want it to be orthogonal, I end up with C2, C0 plus C3, C1 equals 0. Okay. Second is a normalization, which I won't pay attention to, but it gives you another constraint. And then the third is you want the resulting functions. So if SL plus 1 fits a generic linear function, AX plus B, then SL fits AX plus B. Okay, so this gives you two additional constraints. And so you count up the number of constraints we have on the Cs, and you end up with 4. And so it gives you enough information to specify these Cs.
What does it mean that SL plus 1 fits?
Yeah, so you can, it means you can say AX plus B equals sum on K SL of X minus K times some coefficients, alpha K. So there are alphas that you can choose that will make this represent this function exactly.
And these alphas have nothing to do with the Cs?
Well, given a set of Cs, you can test this condition, right? So if you assume, so first of all, you want the initial functions to be able to be complete enough to represent this linear function. So this is completeness. Sorry, I should have said this is completeness. So we assume that the starting functions have completeness in the sense that they can represent any low order polynomial, in this case up to linear order. And then we make sure that the Cs don't throw that away, that they keep that property. Okay, so so criteria 3 representing low order polynomials is just like the idea when we went back, go back to the beginning of this lecture, we fixed the real space RG by saying that we were going to make sure we're going to get the states to keep from a density matrix. You know, that we're going to put long range wave functions into a density matrix and choose the wave functions from that. Okay, so this completeness criteria is essentially the same thing. So if I think of a wave function on a large length scale that's very smooth, well, how would I represent that wave function is very smooth? I could Taylor expand it and just keep a few terms. Okay, so if I take this wave function and I just keep a few terms, and I say, well, why don't I take then a constant term and a linear piece and add them into a density matrix and diagonalize that density matrix and use that to choose the states. This is essentially the same as this criteria 3 that says we make sure that the function can represent these low order polynomials. Okay, that might not be completely clear, but I want to get a little bit farther. Okay, so this wavelet constructed out of these 4 coefficients was first constructed by Galbuchet. And this is the D4 wavelet. And she put in these criteria, and she found that the CKs are equal to 1 plus root 3 over 8, 3 plus root 3 over 8, 3 minus root 3 over 8, and 1 plus root 3 over 8. Okay, so this D4 Daubechet wavelet is sort of the most famous wavelet. If you look up on Wikipedia, you'll find a picture of this wavelet because it sort of looks sort of weird. The fixed point of this wavelet, see if I have a sort of a sketch here. Sort of looks like, okay, so the fixed point looks weird. This is W of X for D4. Okay, so it's got all sorts of, it's continuous, but it's got little kinks. And you might think, well, how is this supposed to add together and represent a straight line? Well, the kinks all cancel. Okay, so this is a very strange sort of function. Okay. So finally, I will get to drawing the mirror diagram. So the diagram that I drew at first with these overlapping things is inconvenient. You know, it leads to a sort of a constraint that you write down, but it's not, this constraint isn't sort of apparent in the diagram. So what we can do to make this sort of a more natural diagram is to sort of replace these overlapping things with a disentangler. Okay, so let me draw a mirror network, which is also the network for this D4. Okay, so and okay, so there's a piece of this. So the new thing that I put in, it has a tree structure, but it has these disentanglers in it. Okay, so what are the, in this single particle context, essentially we have this thing with four legs is going to come from a little tree piece and then two of these disentanglers like this. Okay, so essentially this piece is going to give us C0, C1, C2, C3. Okay, but this piece is a unitary transformation. It's actually just a 2x2 matrix. So this guy is just a cosine theta and a sine theta and a minus sine theta and a cosine theta. So if I say I have a 2x2 orthogonal transformation, this is, everything's real, this is what I get. So there's some theta that specifies this unitary transformation. So what happens is, you want to have this sort of tree structure that keeps everything sort of simple and blocking together like a real space RG. But you need your functions to spread out a little bit more, because if they don't spread out a little bit more, they look like this. So the unitary transformations say, you know, we think we're looking at the function at this site, but it's not just a delta function for that site. It's spread out a little bit over to the next site. But by making these unitary, or a unitary transformation, it's automatically orthogonal to the guy next to it. So once you draw it in terms of this diagram, this orthogonality that you had to write down somewhere, it's automatic as long as you just choose this unitary transformation, this form. Okay, so we start off with functions that say are localized on one site. And so say here's phi 1, and here's another one localized on this site. And then we apply, here's phi 2, and we apply this disentangler, And it's going to make the top one look like this. So a C and an S. And it's going to make the other one into a a C and a minus S. Okay, so it's going to smear out the function a little bit in a way that automatically keeps it orthogonal. Okay. So so then this picture translates to, so let's let this simple tree, I'll just write it as alpha and one. It's just two different numbers, and I'll ignore normalization, so keep one of them one. And so then the relationship to this diagram comes from putting an alpha here and a one there, and then put the disentangler. So on this side, this guy gives me a minus S and a C. And over on this side, it gives me a C and an S. So those are the two rows of this 2x2 matrix where I'm just writing it as C, S, minus S, C. Okay, so this is minus S alpha, C, S. Is equal to C0, C1, C2, C3. Okay, so this is writing it in terms of this mirror network with these coefficients. Then I get this. I need to try to match these up. I'd like to get these Daubechet coefficients and see if that makes sense. Okay, so the completeness go back to choosing the angle theta. So if I choose, say, theta equals 0, then the disentangler does nothing, okay? And I get just two functions like this and another function like that. If I choose theta equals 45 degrees, okay, then I get that and that. Okay, and so if you think about what this does to the function that you're trying to get, you're trying to get a function that sort of smoothly falls off. Okay, so this function just gives it a sharp edge. If you make it completely constant, it pushes the edge out a little bit farther, but it still has a sharp edge. So if you want to try to get a sort of more reasonable function, you want something in between. And so we might say guess that it might be reasonable to take 30 degrees. Okay, and there your disentangler matrix is this. Okay, so it does that for one function, and the other function it does like that. So this minus sign is sort of introducing wiggles into the final function that you get in order to keep them orthogonal, but it's also smearing it out. Okay. Let's see. So let's take this form here, and let's try to make sure that this resulting function can represent a constant function. Okay, so we're just going to, the way I'm going to do this is I'm going to, there's essentially two parameters. There's the alpha and the angle theta. And I'm just sort of going to guess this angle 30 degrees for theta. And for the completeness, I'll derive the completeness condition. And I'll derive the completeness condition just saying that the function should represent a completely flat function. Then the fact that it can represent a straight line sort of comes out from this choice of 30 degrees as a good guess. Okay, so the way you can do completeness is you say, I have a C0, a C1, a C2, and a C3. And from the next wavelet over, I get a C0, a C1, a C2, C3. And the completeness condition is that sum on all the S of X minus K is a constant. Okay, so we want to be able to represent a constant, but sort of by translational invariance, we don't have to figure out what this coefficient is. It's just the same for every site. So this is our completeness condition. Okay, so what you end up doing is you essentially add these coefficients. It sort of is clear if you think of it in terms of a grid for the lowest level, like this. Basically, you're going to take this and add it together. And so you have some other functions that come in over here, other functions that come over here. But in this region, there's only two overlapping functions. So for this to be a constant, I need to take C0 plus C2 equals C1 plus C3. Or writing it in terms of this, you get C minus S alpha equals S plus C alpha. And if you solve that for alpha, you get alpha is equal to C minus S over C plus S. Okay, so if you use that for the choice of alpha, use this for your choice of C's, then you've got the completeness for constant functions. And you have coefficients that look like some normalization minus S, C minus S over C plus S, C minus S over C plus S, C S. And if you plug in theta equals 30 degrees, then C minus S over C plus S equals 2 minus root 3. And you plug in normalization, you fix N, and you get 1/8, 1 minus root 3, 3 minus root 3, 3 plus root 3, 1 plus root 3. Okay, so let's compare that with these coefficients. So the difference, let me try to make sure I got everything right here. Coefficients. This one was a minus sign. Great. Okay, so this is now just the reverse. So I accidentally constructed a function which was flipped, but it's the same transformation. So this is just D4. Okay, so this little derivation says that if you start with this mirror network and start using it to construct a tensor network, and you put in some simple conditions that you get this most famous wavelet. So there's sort of a deep connection between wavelet theory and Mira. So in Mira, we think about these little unitary 2x2 matrices as being more complicated disentanglers, but the language there is to say that there's short-range entanglement and long-range entanglement, and we want to use the disentanglers to get rid of some of the short-range entanglement, And then at a larger scale, we sort of deal with longer range entanglement. In the wavelet language, it's all just about kinetic energy and smooth functions and, you know, avoiding edges and smearing things out. It's sort of a simpler context. So these little unitary transformations are the thing that just sort of takes a sharp edge and smears it out a little bit at that particular length scale while keeping things orthogonal. And then after that, you build up this sort of tree tensor network. Okay, so let me just make a couple of comments.
Can I? So why did you say that the angle has to be 30 degrees?
I put in 30 degrees here to get that.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You have not done that. You still fulfill, you still have an alpha that allows you to put a greater function.
Yeah, so I would get something that fit a constant function, but not a linear function.
Okay, so if you now try to fit a linear function as well, you mean?
I know that it works because I got the Dauvilliers wavelet coefficients, which that was one of the things that were used in their derivation. So
if you try to get fit constant and linear functions, then you end up with this only.
Then you should get out of the derivation that theta has to be 30 degrees.
This 30 degrees is special.
Yeah.
It's the only solution.
Well, it's the only, you can get reasonable wavelets with theta equals something else. Okay, but they won't have as desirable properties.
And in particular, they won't fulfill this criteria.
Right. Okay. So what does this tell us? If Giffre hadn't figured it out for the many particle system more directly, we might have been led towards wavelets. But what do we get now that we already have Mira and we have this? Well, this is just the lowest order wavelet, only 4 coefficients. And so there are, you know, much higher order wavelets. Do those higher order wavelets correspond to some generalization of a Mira diagram? I don't know. You know, how do you make them go farther? Do you stack up more disentanglers or disentanglers that mix up more states? I don't know. The smoothness that, maybe the most interesting thing is that, so the scaling function is also quite irregular. So it's telling us that if we take Mira to the fixed point, at least sort of for this class of problems, there's somehow some lack of smoothness in this sort of problem. That, you know, the Mira is very local and it allows us to do contractions in a very nice way, but there's a penalty for keeping the network so local. And in this problem, the penalty shows up as that you end up working with functions that have this irregular structure. So you can piece these together to make the functions that you want, but if you take them in isolation, they can have sort of weird properties. Okay, so let's see. So final, in conclusion, wavelets and Mira, you know, wavelets are really one of the most interesting developments in numerical analysis in the last 20 years. They turn out to be closely related to Mira. Yeah.
One question about how you represent higher order. So when you require that the lowest order constant is linear and exactly approximated, so can you exactly represent it by the wavelet? Is it not that any higher order?
So the ways these are constructed, so you can look up in some standard text for a sort of nice, easy way of constructing different classes of wavelets. So this type are constructed by saying, okay, now let me allow 6 or 8 coefficients. Okay, I get some additional orthogonality constraints, which uses up some of the coefficients, but I also get to bump up the order of the polynomial that I fit. And so this is sort of a up to first order polynomial. So every time you add 2 more coefficients, you bump up the order by 1, and I think. And so the higher order ones are smoother, but they're not super smooth. They have little funny wiggles that sort of show up as discontinuities in higher derivatives. Okay, I'm done.
Is this
anyhow
special 1D?
Well, so the way these have been developed in sort of numerical analysis, it's fairly straightforward to do all this work in 1D and then take products of X, Y, and Z to say get three dimensions. So you can sort of form products of each of these local functions to make a local 3D function. And so that's the way most work has been done. But in terms of sort of specialized networks, you know, for 3D or 2D, there's been much less work done. So that's sort of an open question, whether there's, you know, interesting other things you can do. Yeah.
You scale by a factor of 2 each step, is it possible to scale for the point loaded?
Well, you could block together. Oh, let's see. You could certainly block to, well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Could I ask my question? What happens if you have L dependence and coefficients and not exactly the same problem?
Okay, so that was something that I was, you know, at first I hoped to talk about that. So this issue where your functions look like this, by changing the order of the C's as a function of L, you can make a nice local function that is much smoother. And so as a practical sort of function for numerical analysis, it's much more convenient. Okay, so I thought of that, and it's, you know, only been sort of in my head in a few programs so far, but it's very interesting to think about this. You know, why should the renormalization group transformation, the wavelet transformation, be the same at every level? If you do make it the same at every level, then the fixed point has this funny structure. So if you make it smoother at the finer length scales, then these kinks aren't there. In fact, you can make it sort of have actual compact support in K-space by sort of starting with an infinite order and then working just sort of a finite number of levels. But this is... I don't know. I mean, the Mira, you can...
I think another way of answering the question before is that if you enforce this invariant, you're trying to create a complete set of functions.
Right.
That means you have to go to all length scales, which is infinite. Mm-hmm. So the only way to do that is by specifying scaling values or maybe some cyclic set of such functions.
Well, you can immediately generate, you know, it's not D4, but you know, you could have Dn, and you can say that my wavelet is constructed sort of the last transformation is D4, the one before that was D6, D8, and so you can sort of go back, and it would be always a different transformation, because these can go to arbitrary order. So it doesn't have to...
So you would have to specify a sequence.
Yeah, you can have a sequence. You can have the sequence stop changing, and then use the fixed point at higher order. You know, there's a number of things you can do. So this has compact support in real space. It's bad, you know. I mean, it's got discontinuities at a certain order. So it has a long range momentum tail, you know. Yeah, you can. Yeah. So a power law. So you go to higher order, and the power law gets higher. Okay. So you can play around with that. So there's an issue. You know, when we work with wave packets, we try to get things localized in real space and momentum space. And so we have the uncertainty principle that says that you can only do this so far. Delta x times delta k is of order 1. If in these sets of orthogonal local functions, you can't approach that because the orthogonality messes it up. When you combine orthogonality and completeness, they have to be spread out more to have these wiggles. They're not just nice Gaussians. And so it's sort of messed up. It's certainly worse. Whether there's sort of an uncertainty principle or not, I think there's some theorems, but it's not nearly as clear.